Hi, everybody. I'm Pete. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988, and I'm very grateful for this precious gift called sobriety. I didn't quit drinking. I didn't stop drinking. I was separated by loving power. June 23rd, 1988, and some of that separation was violent, to say the least, in me being torn apart from my master, which was called alcohol. And I had no idea, June 23rd, 1988, that I would be set on a road to freedom, to experience this power and to experience a bliss when I'm integrated with this power. Great things have happened to me, even though my dramas of life may have not been so great. But great things have happened to me nonetheless, and along with that, or parallel with the gift of sobriety, was being integrated with this power I call God and having experiences with it. I've talked a lot about this, of us seek experience all the time. And what happens to us, we have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and we stay separated from the alcohol. And then we enter the world of the spirit, and we're given this sixth sense. We're relying on intuitiveness. There's something that goes beyond after having the awakening and being separated. It talks about growing an understanding and effectiveness. What goes on after we hit that place where we're separated for a while? God has separated us. We have an experience with this power, and he tells us we grow an understanding and effectiveness. What about emotional sobriety? Physical sobriety, mental sobriety, how am I doing in those areas? One of the things I get to do when I sponsor people is, even if they're just out of a rehab and they may have had medical people look at them, I ask them to go see doctors, a dentist, regular medical doctor, and get all that stuff checked out. So they know where they are and I know where they are. Then we get around here a little while, we start to do this work, and we start to have wonderful experiences. And too many times I've seen people neglect physical health, talking about God and 100 pounds overweight, smoking themselves to death, eating themselves to death, have eating disorders or other areas of life. What about emotional sobriety? How am I doing in all my affairs? Because I've had some terrific fear sprees in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're wonderful. I can talk till tomorrow morning about them. Light up the room. I was not doing good in that area because I was in self-reliance, not thinking God was going to take me past that place. And so immediately I go into self, and guess what? Fear is knocking on my door, and I let him in. I have no choice. So how am I doing with emotional sobriety? How am I doing with mental sobriety? How am I doing in those areas? So we have this spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and alcohol is removed. The problem has been removed. We're placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, and my book tells me to grow in understanding and effectiveness, and I'm working with disciplines. Great things, sponsoring people, wonderful things. I'm even in the sunlight of the spirit. What about physical health? And what about mental health? What about emotional health? How am I doing in those areas? I can't stress that enough. I know many people talk the word of God, talk about this book, and ask them last time they went to see a doctor for a physical checkup, I don't know, 3-4 years ago. We need to go to a place of other areas with our lives that this power will allow us to do. But we run into something like, I only know what I know, and if I'm sound asleep to stuff, like, not having a sponsor who's going to pull the rug once in a while and say, hey, when's the last time you did this? Or taking a look at some of the wake-up calls we get along the way. If I'm experiencing fear and talking about God, something's wrong with that picture. And I need to pay attention to how I'm doing. Am I experiencing fear and why? I need to pay attention to that stuff. If I'm experiencing anger and I'm still fighting everyone and everything, I need to pay attention to that stuff. Those are my little wake-up calls that there's more work to be done in certain areas. If I leave this meeting and walk out the steps to my car and I'm completely out of breath, I need to pay attention to that and not worry about going and speaking tomorrow night. Tomorrow night I go to a doctor and take care of that stuff. Make sense? So how am I doing in those areas? Great stuff to pay attention to. my little wake-up calls along the way. I have an experience with fear, and it reoccurs, and it reoccurs again, and the same thing showing up. I need to do work. So I feel really blessed working with something called intent with meditation that about a year ago, I was not feeling really good physically. And it was an effort to tie my shoes, and I was the guy to get up and, you know, walk out to my car, and I was breathing kind of heavy, and I said something was wrong, so I went to a doctor. After being told, you should go to a doctor, I said, I really don't need to, and then I went to a doctor, and they told me I was about 15, 20 pounds overweight, and I'm out of shape. So I take this into meditation, and I found myself exercising. And I'm 45, and I'm in the best physical shape I've been in my entire life. And there's more work to be done with that. But that's pretty neat. How am I doing with mental health and emotional health? How am I doing in those areas? I get my wake-up calls and I pay. The shift for me has been paying close attention to what's going on with me. Pay very close. Remember the words we talked about, watch, aware, observe, turn. How am I doing with those? I pay close attention to those little glitches on the radar. Something's wrong here. I need to pay close attention to it. My spirit is screaming for some help in this area, for me to get help in this area. Pay attention to that stuff. Simply, how am I doing with personal relationships? Am I going to a meeting, you know, getting to a meeting to talk about the 11th step, cut off 30 people on the highway, flip them the bird, get here, sound spiritual, go home, and kick the dog. How am I doing? Okay. I think it was last week or the week before, I talked about some experiences that I have had, and I'm sure you have had many, in meditation. And one of them was getting to a place that I heard a gentleman describe as nothingness, this place in meditation where it's absolutely still. And I had many experiences, and one very recently where I went into meditation, there was noise, and I had the third part of the meditation where I realized I hit this middle part where it was absolutely nothing, complete stillness. Nothingness. And when I came out of that meditation, I was that much more alive, that much more in touch with what was around me, that much more useful, that much more energetic, hitting that place. And I didn't want to talk about this a couple of weeks ago because I don't like talking away experiences while they're happening. I don't like to talk away the experience, but now I have enough permission to do this. One of the things I found out is I was always under the impression that I would create silence. I would go and make silence in meditation. That the noise was constant. And I had to create silence. And what I found out is just the opposite. Silence, like God, always is. Silence is always constant, and it's the noise that interrupts the silence. Whether it be sounds in nature really early in the morning, which are beautiful, or traffic noise, or whatever it may be, chairs pulling in and out of underneath the table, noise, my attachments to noise in my head, the internal dialogue, all that stuff interrupts the silence. The silence is constant, and how could I create something which already is? I can't. Like God is, so is silence. And those two, there should be no duality anymore. And so what I've been really excited about, and I can talk about now, is with my meditation and throughout my day, it's given new meaning to the word turn, which I've used a million times here, turn. But now my turning is into silence no matter what's going on. If I'm in a grocery store, I'm driving in my car, or even if I'm in dialogue with others listening to the silence between the words they speak, turn and get to silence. Even though there's activity in my external world happening, silence is constant. This was a great thing for me, where I am currently in learning this. I thought I had to fight and create silence, and it always is, just as God is. Pretty neat. And what I've been working with now is throughout my day is turning into or back to the silence. Now my meditations are pretty neat because now I don't have to kind of squeeze my way in there. And I got to get still now. I'm meditating. I got to be spiritual. I got to be, you know, I got to get to that place out there. No, it's waiting. I just got to sit. Be still and know I am God. Be still. Language of God is in silence. Be still and know I am God. Waiting. Talked about vision for you. Vision for you. Vision for me. God's creating. Wherever I go, there goes God with me. And so I go into meditation and it's waiting. I don't have to work my way in there. I have this area in my house where I meditate, and I have my mat and all my tools that I use, my candles, my incense, and all the things I use. I don't have to work with that stuff anymore in the sense of, okay, got to meditate, it's this time in the morning, and let's hope the silence shows up, it's there. And that stuff now has become that much more inviting to me. It's an open invitation. And again, I take that into the rest of my day, and it's given great meaning to the word turn. Turn back to this power. Talk many times in this developing a relationship with this power, how it's kind of out there, and then we do some work and we start to have a relationship with this power, and in that relationship we kind of get a concept of our God, our own personal God, and then we conceptualize it, and then we immediately put it in a box because we have this idea of God, right? And God is this. And along with that conceptualization goes all my limitations, my attachments of what I think God is or isn't, my prejudices, what I think God is or isn't. And then I put God in a box, and I forget that God is limitless. And what I tend to do when that happens is the question I like to throw out. Do we feel a need to protect or defend our conception of God? Because I was one of those guys, if you talk to me about God, coming from a different place than I have ever heard before, I would get tight and feel like I had to protect my conception of God. Really, I was protecting me. God didn't need me to protect. In fact, God wants me to ask questions and open up. We took different roads, I'm sure, to get here tonight, but we got here nonetheless. The same thing to this power. Many of us take different paths to get here. When we get there, we get there. When God shows up, God shows up. When we awake to this power, we're awake to this power. And God's not going to say, well, you took this path and you took that path. Not good enough. This one's better. It's all good. It's real easy for me to go from being open-minded and conceptualizing this power and closing my mind, snapping shut against all other ideas to this power. And I, instead of doing things along with, not instead of, but along with the work I do here, I close off all those other areas. And I start to experience contempt, pride, investigation. That is a great wake-up call to pay attention to. Maybe need to go through the work again and get made open again. Need to be opened up again. It's so easy. Talk about continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, and resentment and fear. In our 11th step, they talk about, they use some questions as we need to review for the night, what to look out for the day. All that stuff is all fueled by fear anyway. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. It's all being fueled by fear, and that fear takes me to fear anyway. If that stuff's starting to reoccur regularly, and people are offering me a solution at a Big Book workshop, and I'm not paying attention to any of this stuff, it's a wake-up call that I need to be made open again. And I may want to be spiritual. I may want to open myself up to new ideas, and I don't have the power to do it. It'll be done for me by taking a good look at where we are currently. And I share this experientially. This is what has happened to me going through this stuff, what moved me to go through this stuff. I pay close attention. This word God, if every one of us put down on a piece of paper tonight what we believe God is, your conception of God, your idea of God, my idea of God, I bet every one of us would have some very similar ideas. And I bet, I'll lay out from here to Vegas, we also have some differences too as to what this power is. And then if we were to write down a significant experience we had in our lives with this power, they'd probably be all different. But all of it, our similarities, our differences, and our personal experiences with God still fall short with God itself. The word God limits God. And so what I've learned to do is use the word God. I've learned to use the word power, whatever works, but understanding the how limited I am and God is limitless. And I need to pay attention to your experiences. And I need to pay attention to the path you took to God because of this reemergence of ego that we experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get contemporary investigation. open. God is. It just is. This power just is. And what I pay close attention to, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, how often do we hear now? I was drinking, came to AA, got sober, and we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. How are we doing now? Lots of times ego won't allow us to talk about now because it may not be so pretty. One of the things I found out in getting shifted with a shift of consciousness is by working very, very closely with these disciplines and paying close attention is many things have come to me in meditation. And that is we learn to see with our hearts and hear with our hearts. So this, what's up here, I'm removed from my mind. Because my mind is where the attachments are and the judgments are and the sizing people up are. Well, they're different. They did it different. Not with the heart. And if I'm completely open, it becomes a language of the heart. That's what you will touch and that's what I will pay attention to. That's the shift that goes on. Out of my mind and into my heart. Remember, we talked about, you know, we need to lose our mind. The mind is a wonderful thing to waste. The only time the mind is good is when I'm using it. Usually it's using me, and it's relentless, and it's never good. One of the things I work with, and I'll just read this. You can work with it if you like. It's from a pretty neat book in meditation. It's titled Enjoy Being Alive. And I talked briefly last week about the breathing. Pay attention to the breath, a place of mindfulness. Be present to the moment. How's my breath doing? Breathing in and breathing out, breathing in God, breathing out fear, bringing in this moment, breathing out this moment, paying very close attention to breathing. How am I doing? How am I doing? Pretty neat stuff. It says, to breathe and know you're alive is wonderful. Because you're alive, everything is possible. Practice, continue. Don't waste a single moment. Every moment is an opportunity to breathe life and to experience God. Every moment is an opportunity to experience God. Through your daily life, walk in mindfulness, making peaceful, happy steps on our planet. Breathe deeply and enjoy your breathing. Be aware. Enjoy being alive. Pretty simple stuff, but really, really important stuff. I would leave meditation. I knew it was time for me to go to the work because meditation was getting cut a little bit shorter because I had to get other places. And then I go through my day and find myself becoming frustrated. Or experience fear or anger. And if only this was this way. And using the external world to remedy my internal world. And those were my wake-up calls that, you know what? I'm not mindful to the moment. I'm not present to the moment. And my breathing is erratic. And I'm here with you, but I'm somewhere else down the block. All things we need to pay attention to. I'm talking a lot about that tonight because I cannot tell you how many times people have come to me and shared with me, they're doing prayer and meditation, it's getting cut short, and they're experiencing dramas of life. And it's killing them. And we talk a bit, and I ask them, are you paying attention to a lot of things I talk to you about tonight? Because part of my job of doing this workshop is not just to share my experience from this book, but my experiences, period, even with working with others. And things we need to pay attention to that we can keep on this path and continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So when we leave here tonight, maybe we can sit back and maybe I've disturbed some and say, you know what, I haven't been to a medical doctor in a couple of years, yet I'm talking about this power called God. Or I am fighting everyone and everything around me, yet I am talking about this power of God. Or I'm really not meditating anymore. I tell people I am, but I'm not. You know, really important, don't judge any of that stuff. The ego would love to kill you right now and say, see, you're a loser. Or you don't need any of this. Don't judge it. It just is. That's where you are. It's your wake-up call. Now we turn to this power for the willingness to change, to be made new. If you're not meditating at all, or you haven't meditated, the mind is going to do a deal on you driving home tonight. Tell it, thanks for sharing, have a nice day, and keep going home. But use it. You use it as a wake-up call that maybe this is my wake-up call. Now I need to pray for willingness to go meditate because, as you know, we lack power, right? So we turn to this power to do this deal. So maybe just a simple prayer. Father, thank you for the willingness to discipline me. Thank you for the willingness for me to do this work. Don't judge it. It is what it is. A great teacher shared some information with me that I took here tonight. Part of the spiritual awakening is about removal, removal of ideas, concepts, judgments, removal, removal, always removal. And I thought part of that removal was going to take me to a place that never existed within. All this work we do is really about, as he called it, going home. God didn't shortchange me when he put me here. Everything I need to walk through this journey is already within, as it is with you. What has happened is we've become blocked from it by prejudices, calamity, worship of other things. Chapter Agnostic talks about this. Things we acquire in here, we have contempt, pride, investigation. And all those things, little by slowly, make me fall asleep to this power or block me from this power. And by going through this work, all we are, in a sense, is returning home to what our Heavenly Father gave us when he put us here. And in that journey of going home, he tells us to continue to grow with this power along the line of his will for us. So we're not kind of reinventing ourselves. We're just made new. We are as going home to what this power has given us at the very beginning. He is the Father, I am the Child, with great comforting words. That I have everything I need to walk through this journey and to grow in understanding and effect. It was given to me by an infinite loving power called God the day I showed up, July 14, 1959. As it is for you. Please tell me I don't look 45. Feed the ego. Some days I was feeling 105, trust me. Just a couple of more things I'd like to go over. Our book talks about see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. My relationship with him, H-I-M, this power is right. And great events will come to pass. What a great promise. But how is my relationship with this power? Is she or he more important? The job and my money more important? The car more important? The house more important? Or my relationship with this power is the most important thing? And how am I doing with that power? How am I doing with that relationship? That will allow me to do other things, great things with my life. It's easy to say, well, God's all forgiving, so I don't pray today, that's okay, and I can go about my business, which we do. But we start to fall asleep to that power. Is my relationship, how's my relationship with this power? How am I doing in that area? Again, don't judge it. It's just what it is, where we are currently. Page 86. It says when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. And the first thing I have to do is like you guys to underline the word constructively. This inventory is not to find out what terrible people we are, but to find out where we fell short in thought, word, and deed at night. So the first question I sit with is, do I write nightly inventory or not? That's a yes or no answer. Half measures avail me nothing, so I'm either doing it or I'm not. Am I sitting in prayer and meditation, yes or no? The things we look for in reviewing my day, constructively reviewing my day, is this. It says, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do I owe an apology to anyone? Sins of omission. Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? Because maybe I think God didn't see me or didn't hear me. Was I kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry or remorse or morbid reflection, because this would diminish our usefulness to others. Remember, this is a constructive review. It isn't a review to find out what terrible people we are. It's a constructive review. Where did I fall short? And I see where I fall short. Now, it asks me some stuff here. It says, after making our review, We ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And those corrective measures, I'll sit with and meditate on, and that's what I will ask God to give me for my day, if He sees fit, on awakening, as I go into my day. Where I fell short yesterday, I may need to take that stuff into today. This corrective measures, I was given a great tool years ago. I write inventory, I write my nightly review, and I would write out another column called my corrective measures column. And that was just the things, the opposites of why I fell short during the day. And it was just a little spiritual tool for me to see something, the opposite of where I fell short. If I was dishonest during the day, I just turned to this power and meditated on honesty. If I was selfish, I meditated on being okay with what God gave me, and continues to give me, and giving away. Just the opposite, a corrective measure. Some of us do that, some of us don't. I found it was a pretty neat tool for me. An opposite of where I fell short and thought word indeed for the day. And then I offer it to this power, and He's going to see fit what I need and don't need anyway. One of the things about working with this stuff at night is, again, I don't worship the methodology, but I worship the power. And the way I would read certain spiritual books during the morning, and sometimes I wouldn't, I didn't judge that. I got into a place where I had to read certain amount of pages in these different books and meditate for so long and say certain prayers, and it was getting so tight that I couldn't breathe. And that was cut loose. I do what this power moves me to do. I'll read, I'll go through times where I'm reading, and sometimes I go through times where I don't. The thing what I've been consistent on is prayer and meditation. I've worked with incense and other things, and sometimes I don't work with that stuff. I currently am. Same thing with nightly review. I'll retire for the night, and I'll get out pen and paper, and I'll review what went on during the day. If you remember what we do in Step 10, there are times where I'll write during my day. I still write at night. What did I miss? What disturbed me? Where did I experience some fear, dishonesty, doubt, whatever was going on? And I'll write some inventory. And then I'll sit in prayer again, and then I'll turn into meditation, and meditate on those corrective measures, meditate on this power, wherever God moves me. But I'll sit and meditate at night. Sometimes I'll read, and sometimes I won't. I don't judge any of that stuff. The point is the practice of what we're doing. How is my practice? Do I have a practice? Because that practice will really take care of me, the retiring at night and on awakening for my day. And really, if we think about it, if we're living this path and in the sunlight of the Spirit, it will really determine my course to this life, this journey through life. It will. Sit with people and speak to them who have been disciplined, who are working with this for years. There's something different. Their attachments to the external world are almost non-existent, but they're certainly awake to the present moment. And that's what gets me excited. And not every one of them is a man of the cloth. Some of these people work, have families, and have to deal with that type of stuff also. And yet they're very much alive and very much awake by working with some disciplines. Pretty neat stuff to do. One of the books I've studied has taught me many times I would get the impression of, well, when I become like that guru, or how do you get to a place called enlightenment? How do you wake up? And what my mind would do, and this author explained it so beautifully, what my mind will do, where my ego lives, will tell me that that is an impossibility and will complicate it to no end, to make me feel like there is no way I can get there. And already I start to doubt the power of God. I worship my mind and my ego. And really what it is me experiencing this power, being awake to the present moment. There's enlightenment. Many times we talk about this power, it's all loving, it's all powerful, it's all forgiving, it's all, and go to a 6- and 7-step meeting and you'll hear this, well, I know I'll never be perfect. And the question I sit with, well, time out. If God is all powerful, how do you know, how do I know, one of us will never be perfect? How do I know this power won't touch one of us tonight and say, from here on out, you're perfect because I have the power to do that? And every time I make statements like that or pay attention to them and go with them in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, little by slowly, I've already limited my God's power. anything is possible with this power. Be wide open to it. I work with these disciplines to experience this God. But I don't worship the methodology because I found the very things that take me to this power be the same things that take me away from this power, that block me from this power. I can really intellectualize the hell out of God rather than just having an experience with it. So how am I doing with the nightly review? What am I looking for in my nightly review? Some of us write mechanics here. Some of us write columns. I write columns at night. Some of us answer questions. I personally like the columns. It keeps it simple and to the point for me. That's how I work with this. And again, I take my corrective measures to prayer and meditation. I sit with them. And then I'm done. If I need to speak to someone that night, which very recently I did because of a drama of life, I will call up my sponsor and say, here's what's going on. Here's what I have on paper. And here's my nightly review. And I need to talk about this with someone. I need a different angle on this stuff. And I've done that many times. Very recently I've done that. Something that was very troubling. I won't give my mind a chance to start running the show because it's capable of doing anything. Out of meditation, great things have happened to me. Simple things, like in the seventh step when it came to me, Father save me from me. That came out of a meditation, going through the work the second time. So it was made abundantly clear to me, and I pay attention to that I will do me and faster than anyone. Going through this work, working with disciplines in 10-11, what comes to me? Clear words, very subtle. Don't doubt. It was as if one of you guys spoke to me and whispered in my ear, don't doubt. It was about to hit the fan of my personal life. And I'm working with this stuff and I'm starting to get like, I'm feeling like I'm on thin ice. And I work with this and I work with this and words come to me, don't doubt. That comes out of meditation, the language of God. Be still and know I am God, and that's where he will talk to me. If I sound like a loon telling you that, you speak to other people who've had those experiences. They will confirm what I'm telling you. God will speak to you in those meditations. He will also speak to you through other people. But we need to pay attention and listen to it. Meditation experiences. I shared last week on doing this work how I was convinced that God knew me, Pete Marinelli, and that was a big shift for me rather than I'm wondering if he's listening. I'm praying to this power out there, but does he know me? Does he hear my heart? Does he read my soul? Does he know what's going on with me, my dramas of life? So I share another experience in meditation that another complete revolution for me that altered the course of my life. I was 3 years old, and my mom, who suffered from the illness, was in the grip of the grapes when I was three and experiencing a nervous breakdown. I didn't know what it was till I grew older. And I was living in South Brooklyn, and I watched my mom collapse on the sidewalk. And I remember punching this wall, and I remember the ambulance and the cops driving up, and they were about to take her away, and this older gentleman, I lived up above a luncheonette. I remember him covering my eyes and taking me away. I was 3 years old. And the next time I saw my mom was in a hospital. She was getting strapped down to a gurney, and they closed the door. It was about where that doorway is. And I remember looking and them closing the door on it. And that's not a pretty picture for any three-year-old to see, his mom going through that stuff. Well, I sober up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wanted to do something about that, maybe go visit this spot in South Brooklyn. And I was told by some other teachers who may be falling asleep on that path, leave the past alone, don't go there. It's probably too painful. And I look at those words they told me, and they were probably already doubting their God. Well, I start working three-a-day meditations on awakening, retiring at night, and the religious practice I do during the day. And I'm in this practice, and what happened to me were great things. In the meditation, I start to experience something that I never experienced before and would only happen to me in meditation. And that was what appeared to be this statue, but it was kind of old and dusted, and it really couldn't make it out, but I knew it was some sort of statue, and I didn't think much about it. And the very next day I do my practice, I go into meditation, and the same thing appeared after minutes, and it got a little bit clearer. And after a few days of this happening, the statue was almost lifelike. And I could almost touch like flesh. And this saint, she was holding, a saint of my religion, was holding this little infant. And it was really kind of neat because the infant was me. And she had it nestled in Harams, and the message she gave to me was I had to go back to this spot in Brooklyn. During this experience, and in my religion, I found out that this was significant. My sponsor told me about it when I was sharing what was going on. I got this smell of flowers. I didn't know what it was, but it was a bouquet of roses. And I had no idea what this meant, but in where I was brought up, that was sort of significant. And that was the question asked to me by my sponsor. And I says, yeah, what does that mean? He says, we need to connect the dots and do not talk this experience away. You need to sit with this and see where it takes you. Anyway, I had this this saint tell me that I need to go visit South Brooklyn. And I keep working through meditation, and Mark, my sponsor, was leaving to Texas, and Joe H. from California was in town. And he says, you need to talk to Joe about this. He'll know exactly what you're doing. And I sat with Joe on Thursday night, and he says, oh, yeah, we get to take care of this and make an appointment Saturday. We'll go down to South Brooklyn. And on the way down there, Joe was sharing with me, do you think you need to make amends to your mom for anything? And I says, no, it never occurred to me. And by the time I got to South Brooklyn, there were some things I need to sit with my mom and talk to her about. And he shared incredible, miraculous experiences with him, with his nine-step and his prayer meditations. And I was very secure going with Joe down there. And we got to this spot, and I remember getting out of the car. Now, all this came from meditation. This whole experience. And I got out of the car, and before I got out, Joe held on to my hands, and we made prayer, and then I was let go, and I got out of the car, and I remember going over to a spot, and this I remember clearly. I stood in a spot, and it wasn't 6 inches to the left or right, but exactly, because I could feel an energy, exactly where I stood when I was 3 years old. It was exactly that spot, and I could feel it. And I remember kneeling down and making prayer with this little kid who was me and letting him know that, you know, you did nothing wrong. For years I walked with, I could have stopped my mom's alcoholism. I could have stopped her suicide. I could have stopped her death. I could have stopped all of it. And I blew it. I blew it. The first wake I ever walked into was hers in my life. I was 14. And it was her. I mean, what a place to walk into. And I remember almost collapsing. And the voice in my head said, you could have done something to stop this. And that was current with me through my whole life. And that's not a pretty thing to walk with. And I let this kid know that you did nothing wrong. You were powerless over this whole deal. And I made prayer with him, and I got up, and I walked to exactly where my mom stood when I was a kid, and I remember touching the wall where she was punching. I remember her hand appeared to be bloody, and she was just punching this wall in hysterics. And I stood there and put my hand on the wall and made prayer, and at the encouraging of Joe H., I had a talk with her. We talked about graveside amends, and it was sort of like that. And I let her know a couple of things, how truly sorry I was for some things, and I had this talk with her, made a prayer, and I went back to the same exact spot, and again I sat with this kid. And this is a rough part of South Brooklyn, and at this point I'm kneeling on my knees, and people are looking out the window like, who's this maniac on a corner, you know, what's going on? And I thought I put closure on it. I looked around where I lived upstairs, and I went to get back into my car, and it was as if something stopped me, and this I can't explain at all. Something stopped me from going into the car. There was something there, some sort of power. I could not get into my car, and I leaned in, and I says, Joe, I can't get in the car. I can't leave yet. I can't leave this kid here. He's been here for over 40 years. I can't leave this kid on this corner anymore. He's been tortured and suffered enough. And Joe immediately got out of the car and said, well, you better do something with him. I says, what? Oh, great one. And he says, you better ask God. And I said, thanks for the info. I appreciate it. And, you know, what came to me is my sponsor says, dependence on God and not on anyone else. And, again, I asked God for some guidance. And I made some more prayer. At this point, Joe H. is walking around and noticing lots of things. And he notices one thing that really changed my life. On the sidewalk, just a little bit to my right where I was standing, he said, hey, you better take a look at that. When my mom had this episode, I have two brothers, John and Anthony was not yet born, and my brother Johnny was a newborn. And he said, you need to take a look at what's on the sidewalk etched in the concrete. And I said, why? And he says, you need to take a look at this. And I looked, and what was written in the concrete was, to Peter and Johnny with love, and three little X's underneath it. And I was pretty much leveled with that one. Now, it's easily, as I've always shared this, to chalk that up to, well, maybe someone in the neighborhood wrote that. What I'm convinced of is this, that based on my experiences in here with this power, and listening to all of your experiences in here with this power, that came from not someone from the neighborhood, that came from a place called Bliss, where this power is listening to me, where my mom is listening to me. There's something way beyond showing up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that gets done for us. Way beyond being separated from alcohol. That's why it frustrates the hell out of me when I go to a meeting and I hear, if you didn't drink today, you're a winner, and all you have to do is not pick up a drink. Are you kidding me? With what goes on in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, with some following some simple rules, the places we're taken to, and the things that get resolved in my life. Because many of my dramas of life, many of my troubles today are because of unresolved things from the past. I operate with you today based on an experience or a relationship I had in the past. I'm not taking care of myself today because I have unresolved stuff from the past. And what we get here is this power to take us back there, resolve it, and go forward. How can I stay awake to the present moment and move forward if I'm still troubled by what haunts me from the past? How can I hear this quiet, still voice now when I got a voice screaming to me from yesterday? But that's what goes on in here. That's why I share these experiences with you. Great stuff, just through prayer, meditation, and working with the early disciplines. Incredible stuff happens to me and to you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had many people come up to me and say, you know, I've had experiences, but I'm fearful of sharing it at my home group. I've had experiences, I'm fearful of sharing it from a podium. I'm working really hard with prayer meditation. I'm writing inventory at night. I'm writing inventory during the day, but I'm afraid of catching hell from my home group or other people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I encourage you to go shout it from the rooftops, because we need to hear about that stuff. We need to hear about people writing inventory and out there making amends and out there doing prayer and out there working with meditation and being quick to see where religious people are right, making use of what they offer. That's what we do. It's way beyond being separated from alcohol. 11th step, what tremendous stuff. Any questions? Hi. I'll write down. They have some things they ask us here. They talk about, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? I'll write column inventory. I'll review what took place from my last inventory, if it was done a day, if it was an hour ago, whatever it may be. And I'll write out my resentment inventory, my resentment, my cause, effects, seven areas of life, where I was at fault. And sometimes at night I'll drop down this corrective measures. If it's a fear inventory, I'll answer the questions about fear. And I'll just, that's what I mean by columns.
The inventory, mini inventory at night.
Exactly. I'm real careful about my inventory, how much I was paying attention to my mind. We've talked a million times about the mind in here, how the mind will use this present moment as a resting spot to go back into before and later on. And when that stuff happens, you know I'm running into me wherever I go and I'm in collision with everything around me. Another thing to pay attention to as I'm writing inventory. Go ahead. Hi. Morbid reflection. Give you an example of morbid reflection. Okay. If I fell short in thought, word, and deed, I'll write inventory. My mind will say, boy, you fell short today. My God, you really fell short. You're not really doing this deal. You're really not as spiritual as you think you are. You really shouldn't take another meeting. In fact, you're really a loser. And it just goes on and on and on. Morbid reflection. What I should have done so much better, and I failed, and the judge is going to just cut me to ribbons over it. rather than I fell short and thought were indeed, my corrected measure is allowing me to get back on the horse and correct it tomorrow, turn to this power and ask him for certain things, and then I move out from there. It diminishes my usefulness to you. Because what I start to do, more of a reflection, it's selfish and self-centered. I'm consumed with me all over again. Because spiritual pride told me I'm without fault. I'm in AA 16 years. I should never curse. I should never get angry. And if I do, oh my God, what a loser. What a fraud I am to Alcoholics Anonymous. No, I fell short. I turn back to this power. Turn again. Something to sit with. Falling short and forward, indeed. My experience has been, if I'm consumed with me, I'm not going to be too tolerant of you. I don't need to use a weapon. None of us need to use a weapon to harm someone, but just by words we can. And we can do it to people we love because it's easy target. Tough business meeting, go home and we take it out on our wife or children because the business meeting was tough or the meeting went too long. I didn't like the speaker. The boss gave me a hard time. And sometimes I think a simple I'm sorry is going to fix it, and I found out, no, I don't do that anymore. We take this into my home occupation affair. But something that I've worked with, it says unmindful speech can kill. Things we can sit with in meditation, by the way, all of the stuff we take into meditation. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to listen to others, I vow to cultivate loving speech and deep listening in order to bring joy and happiness to others and relieve others of their suffering. Others. Always giving to others, right? Knowing that words can create happiness or suffering, I vow to learn to speak truthfully with words that inspire self-confidence, joy, and hope. I am determined not to spread news that I do not know to be certain. Sounds like gossip, right? And not to criticize or condemn things of which I am not sure, talking without experience. I will refrain from uttering words that can cause division or discord, or that can cause the family or the community to break. I think of a business meeting right away. I will make all efforts to reconcile and resolve all conflicts, however small. Sit with that. Take that into meditation. There's a pretty neat book called Living Buddha, Living Christ. Any other questions? Comments? In the back. Okay. Okay. Something like I just read, I will read it. I will read it every day until I can memorize it so I don't have to go back to the book, but I will read it every day and take that and sit with it. Just take that passage and focus on that. The power is going to take me where it wants. But I take that into a meditation like the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer. I just sit with that and say it in my meditation. And focusing on that and see where this power takes me. What has allowed me to do is start to have experiences with the words I'm reading so they're not just words. And lots of times they will materialize during my day. Maybe not that day, but later on, where it becomes a working part of my life. They're not just words on a page. Have a question, a concern about something. I'm really not sure. We talked about pause last week. Well, sometimes pause is long enough where I go into meditation and sit with something. Father, what do I do? Here's my dilemma. And I'll sit with that and see where I'm going to go. But I need to also pay attention to what the people around me, because that's where the answer may come or the direction may come from also. But I take that in and I sit with it. I think I talked about page 68 in our big book. I was given an assignment to do. And out of that assignment, I was moved to read page 68, where it says, demonstrate through us what he can do. Tremendous. There's a whole prayer I found on page 68. Tremendous page. I took that, I would read it, and then sit with it. Be still with it. Helpful? Uh-huh. Hi, Jana? No? Hi.
Karen Alcoholic.
Hi.
Thanks very much for sharing that experience. It's very powerful. I am definitely dealing with a big knot of fear, and I'm kind of afraid that I just feel like I'm, there's one, and there's another, and it's like they both want what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to say that. I'm moving towards some relief somewhere, but right now I just feel like I'm
okay. Couple of things. I don't know what the fear is. It's obviously troubling you. Prayer, fear inventory. You need to sit with someone who understands what you're doing. List the fears. And something you could work with right now, this moment. Are you in any immediate danger right now?
No.
Moment to moment to moment. Are you in any immediate danger right now? No. Let's watch the clock. Are you in any immediate danger right now? In the now, there is none. How much fear is psychologically induced about what's going to happen or what I may lose? 12 and 12 says, fearful of not getting what I want, to losing what I have, something like that. Right now, again, any immediate danger? No. I tell you that because I was given that assignment to work with when my personal life was going down the toilet. How am I doing right now? I'm okay. How am I doing right now? Okay. And then I had to do these written assignments, these fear inventories, and sit and do some current fear inventory and sit again with others and get taken past a great, great prayer. Father, thank you for allowing me to see through and walk through the delusion and illusion of fear, which it usually is. We think we're alone and our Father's walking with us. Thank you, Father, for the power to see through and walk through the delusion and illusion of fear. Am I in any immediate danger right now? No, a minute just passed. You're still here. Okay. Mm-hmm. Hi.
I'm Ben, an alcoholic.
Hi, Ben. Yeah.
Just brought back something really powerful that I went through in my first cancer. About 8 years ago, I went to rehab and they had a class called Cognitive Thinking. And so with cognitive thinking, they practiced exactly what you said. Are you in danger now? Are you here now? And it was really just thinking about what you're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And like dreaming up this fear as I go along, snowballing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best thing I went through. Down there, I just like to say, it helped me a lot. I still need it.
We get so involved with what our mind is telling us rather than observing what's going on. I don't know the fears you're talking about. But we can get so identified with what my mind is telling me, it becomes a part of us. Weeks back I talked about an assignment I work with of having no name. With my name came attachments as to what I can and cannot do. And I took into meditation of just being spirit with no name. And I saw how freer I was with that because Pete Marinelli conjured up a vision to me of what he can do and what he can't do, where he can go and where he can't go. And all the fear that was with it, and they get a false sense of self. And what I do is, what my mind does, is look for other dramas, for other things to make me who I think I am. Well, fear, that's part of what I've been all this time. So when that fear goes, I need to look for more fear so I can continue going along. When that goes, I need to look for more fear because that's what Pete Marinelli or whatever our name is, right? In meditation, no name, just spirit. A little frightening, but what is that about? We sit with that, take that into a meditation, no name, just spirit, child of God. All of a sudden, the limitations aren't so powerful anymore. The things I need aren't so powerful. I don't have that full sense of self. I'm spirit, one in one with God. All of a sudden, all things are possible. That took time. I worked with that a long time before I could actually understand it and then work with it. And what I was telling the gentleman in the back, where it becomes part of our life, many times the judge will show up and say, Peter, you can't do that. And I remember I'm spirit. I go with God and I can do it. Vision for me, I can go with it. My mind says Pete Marinelli can and can't do this stuff. Nonsense. Dump it. Okay. Any immediate fear right now? No. A few minutes has passed. Doing okay. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. have a suggestion. We can do it for this young lady. If I was going to do this at the opening and something moved me not to, and now I'm getting moved that we ought to, and I can see why, why don't we have a few minutes. It's 10 after. Why don't we sit and maybe do a five-minute meditation and be really still. So I ask you, invite you to put books down. If you have a posture that you work with already, great. If you don't, I ask you, you could put your hands on your laps. If you're a righty, put your right hand on your left. If you're lefty, the opposite, palms up. Okay. Back straight. If we can just get still. Pay attention to our breathing as we breathe in. We breathe in this power. And breathing out our dramas of the day. Breathing in. Now I'm alive with this power. Breathing out, knowing I'm alive with this power. Let me focus on the spirit I call God as my breath comes in and my breath leaves me. Allow my shoulders to be lighter and wear the world like a loose garment. Let it release through my arms, through my legs, down through my legs and out my feet. Mindful of this breath on the way in. Mindful of this breath on the way out. We thank our Heavenly Father for this sacred gift of sobriety that's allowed us to do great things with our life and to worship Him, to overcome all obstacles in our lives, to overcome alcoholism, to be free, that we may walk in the sunlight of His Spirit and help others on this path. Great things are possible with You, Father. Let us be convinced of that. Let us feel Your power and Your mercy and Your freedom. My mind will tell me none of this is possible. I know great things are possible with You. And so we walk with You like Your children, holding on to their Father. Breathing in, I experience this. Breathing out, I'm awake to this present moment. Come back to the room. Bring ourselves back to this workshop. Back to this moment. Amen. On that, thank you for keeping me sober. A nice way of closing.
Next week will be...